The gurus of how to are with us, are kind of with us. We have a bit of an emergency. Al Ubell is on the phone while Larry is driving. Where are you right now?
We're right now on the Brooklyn Bridge. We're coming down right into the center next to our old area where our studio used to be at the municipal building.
And you got hit by heavy traffic? Is that what happened?
Well, traffic was unbearable from along the Gowanus, from 3rd Avenue, every which way you wanted to go. It was bumper to bumper to bumper to bumper.
So we're not only getting the gurus of how to, but we're also getting traffic reports.
Yes, why not? We're right now coming into the turn into Chambers Street, and we're going to turn left into the right in front of the courthouse building.
So you should be here in around 10 minutes. Maybe we'll be able to get you on live after the first break. What do you think?
That would be wonderful.
But meanwhile, we will proceed as usual and invite our listeners to call us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. You can also leave a question on our comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And Larry, you know, I'm pleased that you're driving and not talking because you could get arrested.
We can get arrested for that. But anyway, Larry is now my chauffeur right here, and we're coming down past Broadway at this point. And we have that word of the month, if you want me to.
I do.
All right, let's start it off with that word of the month right off the bat. And it is in the art of how-to, you know, how to fix things. There will come a time when a screw will break off or be sheared off in a way that seems impossible to remove. There is a tool that can remove that dastardly screw. What do you think it is called?
It's not the unscrewer.
It's an unscrewer, but it has a specific name.
Is there anything you want to tell us before we start taking calls? Because the weather has turned so quickly, and I assume that you have all sorts of tips for people to handle this, whether it's with air conditioners or whether it's gutters and leaders or things that I can't even imagine.
We have to contend with. We really have to start preparing for the winter right now. I mean, it's going to hit us all at once, and we should be starting to perform some heating maintenance.
Did you, when you go over the bridge, sometimes there are these little dropouts. I don't know if that's what happened just now, but
it worked very
this
good
is live radio. Hi, Al. Welcome back.
Thank you. Do I have a question there?
I'm going to put somebody on the line right now. Is Phil from Queens. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing, Lenny? Happy New Year.
You
and
too.
And to the Ubells, too. So I have an old brick house, and I'm getting sort of water damage on the ceiling of the first floor from the second floor, but I have a beautiful point job. I have new windows. I have a new roof. They examine the caps, and can it just be condensation? And as part of that, a few years ago, I had wall air conditioners taken out, actually, more than a few years ago, and they only put in one course of bricks instead of the double course. So could that be a weak spot where condensation is forming?
Well, the problem with the old brick houses, they didn't provide any kind of insulation between the brickwork and the inside layer of the plaster or whatever wall structure you have there. However, sometimes leakage occurs from windows or window frames and the interface between the window frame and the brickwork that hasn't been caulked properly. That's where
All redone. I've been getting the discoloring since all the good work has been done, everything else has been replaced. So I'm wondering, can it just come off the inside of the brick? And is there a way to, say, drill in to give some venting? You know, I would love to have insulation, but would it also pay somehow get some venting through the brick, the external bricks?
In other words, there's sometimes it depends upon how the brickwork was laid, whether it is common bond, or it's whether it's straight bond, or whether it's keyed bond. It depends upon how the brick was done in that particular building, whether ventilation would work or not. If it is solid, if it is a solid brick wall, then I have to take a look at the cavity between the inside furred out wall from the brickwork, unless the brick is actually exposed. Is the brick exposed at all?
Not inside, only on the outside.
Not inside. Well, sometimes there are companies that can put in some fiberglass or mineral wool and blow it into those little small cavities, and that sometimes stops the condensation. The other thing that can be very helpful is to put on a vapor barrier on the inside face of the exterior walls. This prevents the moisture from going through the plaster or sheetrock onto the brickwork and cause condensation. That would be a very good thing to do, and it's generally less expensive than trying to insulate that furred-out wall section that you have on the inside of the house.
Okay.
Right. I appreciate that. If I called your office, could you get me a guy for doing that?
Well, that would be a conflict of interest, really, for us to recommend somebody. I avoid that like a plague.
But
like
do you have advice as to how he might locate a good person?
Well, I would punch up people put up vapor barriers. There are companies that do usually wallpaper hangers, vapor barriers, which is a painted plastic surface that you can put on over the wall, and then after it's well done, then they can paint over this paintable plastic sheathing that they put over the walls.
Where are you guys now?
Right now we're turning into Varick Street.
So you're nearby.
Right in front of the building.
Okay, well, this is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate, and I'm talking with the gurus of how to, Alan Lowry Bell. And you had a quiz, and we got a lot of answers. A lot of people think they know the answer. Should we go through them?
Yes, why not?
Now, I don't know the answer myself because normally you give me a sheet with the answer. That's how I know it. Otherwise, I don't know anything. But this time I'm just going to fly blind, okay?
Barbie, Lawrence is getting out of the car, and he's going to go upstairs, and I'm going to lock up. When Lawrence gets on the line, he'll be upstairs in the studio in a few minutes.
Okay, but meanwhile, let's go through some of these people who think they have the answer. John from
go
Elmont,
ahead.
What do you think it is?
Yes, extractor?
No. Oh. Sorry to say, that's not it.
Oh. Okay, now, Michael from Red Bank, you also think it's called an extractor?
Yes.
Well, if it wasn't good for John, it isn't good for you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much. What about Lorraine from Kearney? What do you think it is?
Easy out.
You got it.
Actually, I thought Lorraine was going to say come along. And Tom from Manhattan is the first one who called him with the right answer. So, Al, is it okay if two people win this time?
Why not?
Okay.
Not? I'm game for that. If two people have the answer, it's okay. The easy out for the audience to understand what it is. It's really a left-handed type of screw, but you got to drill a hole into the old broken screw that's inside whatever it is holding, and then this left-handed screw gets screwed into that hole, and by doing it left-handed, if the screw is right-handed, it actually takes out the screw.
Okay, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to put Lorraine on hold. And Tom, let me put Tom on the air for a moment, just because Tom should get his moment in the sun. Tom from Manhattan, you knew the answer.
Yes, easy out.
Now,
Lorraine beat me to it.
Have you ever used an easy out?
I personally have not, but I used to be in the elevator business, so a lot of the mechanics did use it. So that's how I know.
In the elevator business, where they use screws almost totally, that is a very important tool for them because they're always shearing off the screw or it gets corroded away or, say, some piece of machinery comes by and just slices it off, and then it's very difficult to remove.
Yes, unfortunately, they did break too many screws.
I'm going to put you on hold. And both of you are going to win. What are you going to win? You know, who's going to tell us?
I'm going to tell you.
Because Larry has just joined us
and
here.
And before I tell, Dad, make sure you take the key and put money in the meter. And you're going to win.
Absolutely.
And you're going to save money, save energy by Al Ubell and George Merlis.
You're breathing heavily.
A little bit.
You've been running?
A little bit.
Well, I'm glad that you made it, and I'm sure you can handle some of these calls while your father parks the car and takes care of all of the other things and then joins us in a little bit.
Okay.
So let's go to Rob from Coscom, Connecticut. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Leonard. I'm still working on my fixer-upper out here, and the latest issue, I've got a long list, but... was I had a painter in working on painting frames of windows and sills and what have you, and turns out that he sort of resealed a sill that had been beginning to rot, and I guess he covered up the weep holes on the sill. So now when it rains heavily, we're just above a lower roof, so they get a lot of bounce off that roof onto the sill. And my question is, where do I drill if I do drill to
Let me ask you a question. Are we talking about a storm and screen situation?
Well, the storm and screen are just beyond the sill, yes.
And so water collects between the storm and screen and the regular window at the sill and is causing the sill to rot out, or it's all...
Well, I'm afraid it will begin.
Okay, what you need to do is I would drill about anywhere between 3 or 4 holes at the same level that is the sill, so right above the sill. Right above the sill on the, like, from the outside, you would drill through the storm and screen, and where the bit would go through the metal, and it would be just above the sill.
Okay.
Just above, that, like almost flush with the sill. Like the bottom of the drill bit would be flush with the sill. Maybe even cut into the sill a little to create little drainage troughs.
Can I ask you something? The storms are very old, and there seems to be a bit of a crack. Mm-hmm. If I drill through between that, where the storms hit the sill.
But is the storm made of aluminum?
Yeah.
Then that shouldn't really be a problem.
Unless the screw breaks, and then he can use that easy out.
He's easy out, yeah. But it shouldn't be a problem because you're just creating these small little, and these holes would only have to be less than a quarter inch, maybe 3/16 of an inch, and that would all you would have to have.
Thank you so much for calling us, Rob. Kevin from Ridgewood, hi, you're on the air.
Yeah,
Kevin, are you there?
Thank you for taking my call, Leonard.
What's up?
Gentlemen, my question is, I have a house on the shore. And
lucky you.
I'm just wondering, what's the most efficient thing to do with my water heater? I use the house every 2 or 3 weeks. Is it better to keep it in low vacation mode or leave it on hot all the time?
No.
Which is the most efficient?
That's easy. Most efficient is when it's not on. So
if I use it every couple of weeks?
But yeah, because keeping the water warm is way more expensive than warming it up for the couple of what it'll take. What is it, an electric water heater or is it gas or oil?
It's gas.
I mean, it's only going to take the gas water heater maybe about an hour, hour and a half to warm it up. Now, if that period of time, if you divide that by the period of time where you have lost just through to the water heater cooling off, you can't even compare the two. So I would keep it in vacation mode or even lower so it doesn't turn on.
Even lower.
You just don't take a shower or wash dishes when you arrive. You wait a little while.
But with a gas water heater, it's only about...
Yeah, for the house to heat up anyway. So.
Yeah, and that's only an hour and a half, so it should be fine.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling us.
No problem.
We got a comment on our show page from Mike Flood in Breezy Point. How can I get rid of black mold on furniture? I believe that you've said zinc in the past. How do I apply it?
The thing about black mold on any biological is very difficult to remove because it starts to eat whatever it is, whether it's wood or cellulose. And the other problem is that using bleach on some of these materials will definitely cause them to discolor, and you don't want that either. The zinc issue, we've tried, but there are other commercial applications which you can apply to mold-infested materials that will help keep that down.
So you go to a store and you look for something that says it deals mold. With mold, and you can use it on wood or other organic material.
Well, if it's not on organic material, it's never a problem. And if it's not organic material, you could use bleach.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's that material is where you would have a problem. But it, as far as the zinc is concerned, it shouldn't. I've not dealt with it that much, so I don't really want to make a one way or the other.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will take more of your calls to the gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubel. In fact, we can say Alvin as well because Al just showed up. Our number here is 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. We are back with the gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubel, and we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We took care of the word game very quickly today.
I know. I wanted to comment on that. When he handed it to me, I go, someone's going to get that in a call. And he goes,
now we had a few wrong answers, and I thought Lorraine had the wrong answer. I was going to build up a little tension before I got to Tom, who I knew had the right answer. And then it turned out Lorraine had the right answer as well, and I think seven or eight other people did.
We'll send out two books.
Yeah, well, we've already worked that out.
Yes.
Okay,
our number here is 212-433-9692. Should we take a few more calls?
Yes, why not?
Let's go.
Since we're both here now.
Okay, Emily from Ossining, Westchester. Ossining, Westchester?
Hi. Yeah, Ossining, New York.
Hi, what's your question?
It's an outdoor question. Our front walk is made of, I think it's called flagstone. It's different colors.
Mm-hmm.
And a few of the stones are loose. And my husband's worried that if the guy who does some work for us doesn't get here real soon, it'll be too late to do it. And my question is, what does the temperature have to be before you reset the stones? And can I do that myself?
Well, the thing is that any kind of cement that you should use should be Portland cement to set it into place.
Well, can I ask a question first before you answer the question? Is it set into concrete or is it set into just dirt?
Oh, no, it's not set into dirt. It's set into something solid.
Okay, go ahead.
So it's concrete.
Continue.
So what you got to do is you got to take that slate that's loose and soak it in a pan of water overnight.
Oh.
And then where the concrete is, you got to make sure that that's wet. You could spray that with some spray can or something like that with water in it.
Or a hose.
And then mix up some sacrete. You can buy some sacrete in the hardware store and mix it up and make a nice thick mix to it. It should be not loose or watery, but should be like pasty, like almost like dough.
Like mud.
Like mud. And then push that in there and then just take the slate and stick it back into it, tap it down, and then put a couple of rocks on top of the slate to weight it down so it goes in there. And then leave it alone. Don't anybody step on it for about a day or so, and it'll be set.
And what does the temperature have to be outside? How cold?
Well, as long as it's above freezing, that's all that matters.
Above freezing for like 12 hours or 24 hours?
At least 24 hours until the cement sets in.
Should do it now.
Right now.
Soon. And the other thing is that once you set it, you want to cover it over with plastic.
Right.
So it doesn't evaporate very quickly.
Right.
Okay.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you so much
for calling us.
But for concrete, anything above freezing, preferably above 40 degrees.
Right.
Harvey from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hello, Harvey.
Hi. The apartment directly above me was diagnosed as having bed bugs, and I've had the same exterminator in since then. who tells me that there's really nothing that I need to do, that if I had bed bugs, I'd see them by now. And I just wanted to know whether you agree with that, because it's a frightening thing to know that the bedroom right out top of mine, you know, has been treated for bed bugs.
Well, any living creature, whether it be bed bugs or ants or roaches or what have you, are always looking for, always have to have an attractant. And if your house is clean and there is no food droppings on the floor and you don't eat in your bed and crumbs and stuff like that, the likelihood of the bugs won't come to that location. But if you have something in your house that's going to attract the bed bugs from someone else's apartment to your apartment, it's going to happen.
Okay.
So the idea is cleanliness is the next best thing next to exterminating the roaches themselves or the bed bugs.
Cleanliness is next to bugliness.
You got it. Actually, I've got to tell you that I would probably, because of such a close proximity, I would probably do at least one treatment as a preventative measure. I would. I mean, if you knew it's that close, I would do it.
Me personally, because it's the same exterminator, and he felt there was no reason to treat the bugs.
Now, let me ask you a question. Who does he work for? Does he work for the building, or does he work for the guy above?
He works for the management company of
my
building.
That's why, because he's, you know, because they say don't do as many treatments or save on the treatments, just do that person. We're not paying for any other treatments, and that's probably why.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're getting the best advice.
I see.
I think the advice might actually be tainted.
Yeah, the bed bugs is a very difficult insect to eradicate.
So I would definitely, take prophylactic measures and actually have your place done.
Thank you so much for calling us, Harvey. Betty from Tribeca. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Betty from Tribeca.
Hi. Love your show. Have a quick question.
Yes.
I wanted to know how to winterize air conditioners. I have a specific problem with mine. Mm-hmm. Very high ceilings, and the air conditioner is at the top. And when it was installed during the summer, they left a very big space, like 2 inches all the way around it, and then they just stuffed foam in there. And it's just not, the weather just comes right through. What should I do?
Well, what you can do is, if you want, you can get some, like, strips of wood that is the same size or inserting around that frame. And then
I should tell you is that it's a metal a window frame that they put it in, a very old industrial metal frame.
So this is in a window, not really through the wall.
It's through a window. It's one of these huge windows, yeah.
Well, you could still use that piece of wood that I'm talking about, very thin slats, like almost like Venetian blind slats. That's how thin it can be. And you can get that in almost any hardware store or home center. And what you can do is, with a little acrylic caulking on the backside, you could squeeze it into place and make it look better. And then when it solidifies, the caulking compound, you can get some paint or something like that to just make it match into the metal. In other words, the idea is to close all of that out so that there are no drafts and it doesn't look so unsightly as it probably does now.
And after you finish...
But I'm not so concerned about the look. It's like it's really cold.
Right.
And then what to do about the air conditioner. I'm sure air comes through there in the winter.
Okay. What as far as around the surface, as far as the foam being stuffed in, the foam will do the work, but the wood will act as to prevent the drafts from occurring.
Okay. Right. Okay.
Okay. So you're stifling the air. As far as over the air conditioner, you want to take a plastic bag or some kind of plastic material and remove the face, and then put the plastic over it, and then push the face back into place and trim around it, and then put the screws or whatever holds the face in place or clip it back in place, and that will stop the air from infiltrating through the air conditioning unit.
Aren't there products that they actually sell?
I've never done that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. That's a good idea.
You take
like
the cover
that.
Off, you stick it on, you put the cover back on.
Go ahead.
Aren't there products that they sell also to prevent drafts from coming through the air conditioner?
Yeah, I know, but a garbage bag is way cheaper.
the garbage
bag doesn't come with the box that says it's one use.
You have to have the right size, and there's a string that you pull and you tie up and knot in it, and it always hangs off like it's hanging loose.
That,
like it doesn't really look good.
That's usually for the outside.
Inside too, they have the same thing.
But you could do that, and it works pretty well. Or if you don't worry about the unsightliness of it, you could put the plastic right on the outside. But that's kind of ugly.
A listener, Myron in Brooklyn, writes, how does one eliminate that loud knocking in steam-heated radiators in old brownstones? One guy told me that one end of the radiator is not connecting to the feed pipe and needs to be lifted at an angle so that the water flows back into the pipe by using small blocks. But that didn't work last winter.
Okay. Well, hopefully he's tilting it the right way. At one end of this is only works on one pipe steam systems. And how do you know if you have a one pipe steam system? Is only one pipe is going into the radiator. And on the other end of the radiator is an air vent. You should pick up the side that has the air vent and pitch the radiator toward the pipe coming in or the valve, the shutoff valve. It's also very important that the shutoff valve either be all the way opened or all the way closed to prevent banging also. Now, if you do all those things and it's still banging, there could be a problem in the steam risers that are pitched in properly. And the banging is when the live steam hits the water, causes the water to boil in the pipe, and that's what the banging is. So sometimes the boiler could be overfilled, sometimes some of the risers weren't pitched properly, or the quick vents down in the cellar area are in need of changing. And these will all affect that. But
yes.
Try the pitching away, lift up the side with the air vent, pitch it toward the valve.
Okay. We go now to Marina from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, it's Marina speaking.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to ask you, my house is having a mold issue, and I am not sure where it's coming from. My garage smells from mold, and so does my washing machine. Has this really very bad odor coming, actually, when the machine is done, when I did a wash, I smell it. It's like this very moist, this horrible odor.
The first thing I would do is if this is a garage area or a laundry area attached to a garage, what I would do is, first of all, inside, if you're getting the smell inside the washing machine, then I would, every time you do a load, leave the door open. Leave the cover open. Let it dry out. That's the first thing. The second thing is, in that laundry area and or that garage, buy yourself a 70-pint dehumidifier that's connected to either a sink or drains outside or drains into some sort of drain and set it to about 50 to 60% humidity. Let that happen and see if the smell and all that issue goes away. Because if the air issue is that moisture is just coming up through the concrete slab or through the basement or cellar or crawl space of the building, then there's very little you can do to really stop that. So you got to get rid of it once it comes in. On the other hand, if you actually have a water leak, then we have to figure out where the water leak is. The mold is a very good symptom to tell you the problems you're having. It usually is an indication of an uncontrolled water or moisture problem. And if by dehumidifying the place, that might work.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts?
Yeah, no, but you're right on target.
So try doing that. Get yourself also a hygrometer. Put it on the wall and try to get that place down to about 60%, and I'm sure the smell will go away.
Thank you so much for calling us. Another caller wants to re-glue a polyurethane tile and is wondering what would be the best type of cement.
Well, the polyurethane tile that comes off, the backside should be really cleansed. In fact, if the tile actually falls off, it's not a bad idea to put it into a washing machine or scrub it up really good with detergent. So
you mean a dishwasher?
A dishwasher would be
expensive. Yeah, you don't want washing machine because that'll break it.
I meant the dishwasher machine. A dishwasher, so really good and clean. And then if you could take some rough sandpaper and sandpaper the backside of that so you scratch up the polyurethane. And the best glue for that interface to the wall would be silicone, and it's good to buy if it's using white grout is to use the white silicone and just put a couple of dabs on the backside and just squeeze it in good and tight and leave it alone, and then the next day put some grout around where the joint is, and that I would use acrylic rather than silicone. Acrylic will come out with a better joint. It'll look very professional.
Wow. Okay.
Okay.
Anna from Plainfield, New Jersey. You're on the air.
Hello, Anna.
Hi. Hello, I have an 1880s Victorian Italianate. My pipe in the wall has burst 2 years in a row. When I took the wainscoting down, I discovered no insulation.
Right.
What type of insulation should I use?
Well, if this is, what kind of pipe is it? A heating pipe? Is it a fresh
water? It's a water pipe. It's a water pipe to the bathroom upstairs. I literally have to insulate from the dining room all the way
now, is this,
up to the...
Don't they sell sleeves that you can put on this sort of thing?
They sell this black neoprene insulation that you can just snap around the pipe and then keep in place with some tie wraps. But don't you have a hot water and a cold water pipe, right?
Yes.
Yes, you got to insulate both of them.
Okay.
And so I would use this. What you do is you measure the pipe, the outside diameter, or OD, as they say, and then you get that measurement, and then you go to the hardware store or home center, and you find a insulation that's the same diameter that it's designed for, and then you slip that up into place. Sometimes you can slip it all the way up the wall without even having to open up the whole wall.
That's true, too.
And that would be great.
In fact,
right now, I literally have to open up the ceiling, the wall, mm-hmm. take out the wainscoting, which is 1880s, it's the original.
That problem that you have is not unusual around the country. So they have pipe wrappings that are made for every single kind of diameter pipe that you happen to have. Some of them is with pressure-sensitive tape that goes on automatically. The only thing you have to do is tape up the joints, make sure it doesn't move, and voila, your pipes will be fully insulated.
Thank you so much for calling us, Anna. Catherine from Westchester. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Catherine.
I need some help.
What's up?
Okay. So,
unlike the other callers,
new windows put in a few years ago.
Yes.
Pre-war house, the windows had been originally had those nice vinyl ones put in.
Yeah.
The day that they're installing them, the outside of the window where the weights were.
Yeah.
They were looking at that and they said, "Oh, do you want us to insulate that?" And my father says, "How much will that cost?" And they quote something that was really just entirely too much. You know, especially day of, seemed a little, you know, fishy.
How much was it?
Says, I don't know. It was a little bit too much. And my father says, "You know what? I'll do that myself at another time.
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry about it."
Okay.
But, of course, he has not done it. And I am freezing to death. And he refuses to believe me. And I'm hoping that if someone else says, "Oh, no, this is a huge waste of energy. This is something that you just have to do," that he'll listen.
Well, go ahead. Well, actually, that's, you know, as a young apprentice, as a carpenter and everything else, I used to put windows in by the thousands, and we used to do replacement windows. And that is one of the biggest things that people would leave out is the insulation in those pockets where the weights, where the balance mechanisms and the weights were located. And that's the biggest loss of heat energy at that location for two reasons. First of all, it's an empty cavity where the air can go through and be flowing through the windows and the cavity of the walls. And secondly, it acts like a flue actually inside because it's such a tall shaft, and that could actually suck the heat right out of the room, and that has to be filled up with fiberglass insulation.
Or they could fill it up with expanding foam.
Foam would be also good.
And you can learn more about saving energy by going to the UBELS website, www.acridbuilding.com, or you can also go to www.ubell.com. You can follow Larry on twitter.com/LarryUbell.
Right, I give helpful hints.
And if people have questions that we did not take care of here because there were all sorts of calls that we couldn't get to, they can get in touch with you, Larry, at larry@ubell.com.
Right.
But you say they should put a phone number in.
Always put a phone number. And don't send your mail to Leonard here.
Please.
Yeah.
Although people will anyway.
Anyway.
You know that.
They wind up in the round file.
And we'll be seeing you next month when what?
When all of America should go forth and fix, save energy, money, and
do it safely.
On tomorrow's show, Captain Chesley Sullenberger fills us in on the details of how he and his crew landed U.S. Airways Flight 1549 safely in the middle of the Hudson River in January. Plus, our latest underreported segment looks at the 25 most important stories from the past year that you haven't heard of. The Leonard LoPage Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan is the executive producer, and we had help today from Fran Jacobs, Stephanie Bernhard, contributing producer Virginia Doris, and Colin Adams-Toomey. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard LoPage, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.